We're talking about the cognitive development dip of pandemic babies and toddlers on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Child development researchers around the world, they've tested cognitive performance and are starting to publish findings, raising red flags about motor and language skill delays. They're wondering whether the ongoing pandemic is shaping young brains and behavior. Join in on babies and children falling behind on milestones, how it affects your family, what you've experienced, 800-642-1234. Barb Tangestall is executive director of First Five Fox Valley. It's a nonprofit providing resources and support for early childhood development in several counties, Outagamie, Calumet, and Winnebago. Barb, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate.
Good morning. So your organization performs these developmental screenings to track progress, give referrals, and you've noticed some trends emerge in the pandemic. What do you see?
It's been really interesting. We've done over 3,500 developmental screenings through the Help Me Grow project, and we began to see changes, not only anecdotal from like home visitors and early intervention therapists. They began to say, we're seeing that children are not communicating as much, or they're behind and delayed a little bit in their motor development. So when we went back and looked at the data, we were seeing significant changes pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, and now just looking at the data post-pandemic, how we've seen that affect young children.
So what do those significant changes look like? What in particular is standing out to you?
We mostly see in the prenatal to 3 years age, and specifically from 12 months to 30 months, delays in communication, social emotional development, gross motor experiences, and then just overall cognitive problem solving domains too. We see delays in those areas, and primarily in that prenatal to 3 years.
And when you say a significant change, this is something that you can see through the data that is quite different than pre-pandemic. Is that right?
Absolutely. We're seeing almost below 50% of children, 1 in 4 children, are showing concerns or monitoring, needs additional monitoring. And then in those age ranges, from 12 to 30 months, we're seeing almost 50% of those babies not developing above normal.
Wow. The delays, are these tracking what other researchers are finding around the world?
Surprising. At first, we thought we're just seeing this, and then the data has been coming out about other studies around the world in the U.S. We're just now seeing the effects of how this pandemic and the lack of social interaction and normal communication skills between families, and we're actually now beginning to see what we saw anecdotally locally is now also being seen nationally.
When you say social interaction and communication, is that because babies just aren't getting out, or what is really going on there?
So think about this. We were in this social experiment for the past year and a half. Faces were covered. Babies weren't able to watch how words are formed or to see the emotions that happen behind a mask. They were in pods. In some areas, grandparents weren't able to see babies that were born during that pandemic until a year later. So that normal socialization with people and relationships that are loving and supportive weren't able to be accessed in many capacities and in many ways.
We're talking about developmental delays in children under 5 with Barb Tangestall. She's the executive director of First Five Fox Valley. This is a nonprofit that's focusing on the development of children under 5 years old. You can join in about milestones, your questions, 800-642-1234. Now, the CDC sets developmental milestones for children between 2 months old to 5 years old. What are some common milestones that you see that are really being affected here by what probably quite could be the pandemic and having such a different type of lifestyle in pandemic times?
You know, Kate, I think I'd like to set set in motion the idea that there are different types of, there's developmental monitoring. That's what the milestones are like. They're not like evidence-based, but they are a collection of experiences that we expect young children to do at a certain age. That's called developmental monitoring. But then there's developmental screening, which is what we were doing through an evidence-based tool like the ages and stages questionnaires. And that's how we're able to determine children aren't necessarily meeting those expected age-related experiences. So, and then after screening, then there's you get diagnosed with a delay. But what we're seeing in the screening, like let's say a 15-month-old should be able to like copy other children playing, or in terms of cognitive milestones, be able to try to play with things like a phone or hold a cup or stack objects. Or take a few steps or feed themselves with finger foods, or even say words like mama and da for dog. Those are like milestones that we hope children achieve, say, at 15 months. And if they're not achieving those, that's when we do a screening, an ASQ or developmental screening. And that's what we were using to see that children aren't meeting those developmental milestones.
And we're going to talk further here about the ASQ screening and how it works in a moment. But I want to go a little bit older here and talk about 4K for a moment in preschool, because Wisconsin ranks 7th in the country for access to free preschool programs for 4-year-olds. 56% of our state's 4-year-olds enrolled. That's from the new State of Preschool report by the National Institute for Early Education Research. What effect does 4K have on development?
4K really supports the development of young children being able to have early access to opportunities for play and social interaction, beginning to learn how to identify words and how you put words together. So 4K is really a critical way in which of getting children ready for school readiness in third grade and reading and all of those types of things. 4K is a very positive experience if it's done right and done through play-based learning.
If you don't have access to preschool, what do you recommend that a family should do?
Parents can get together with other families, such as in homeschooling, where you create interactions where children can play and have play groups, have access to books, and reading is so critical. We have a great program in Wisconsin called Reach Out and Read, where pediatricians are giving books to families at home. So reading to your child, singing to your child, being able to take them outside and play on one of our beautiful parks and play structures that we have, just getting a chance to be physically active and get away from that screen time. 4K allows families to be able to have access to other people besides just families to have those kinds of experiences and monitored for things like fine motor skill, playing with scissors and playing with Play-Doh. All those things happen in 4K.
Barb, how would you advise the parent to negotiate risks in COVID? Their child isn't able to be vaccinated. They don't feel comfortable exposing the child to groups of other people earlier in the pandemic. But, that also comes with the trade-off, the baby's exposure to social emotional development. What are your thoughts there?
You know, I have so many friends who have little ones, and it was scary. We ended up having church school on Zoom, and just to have that interaction and Lego play dates over a screen seems crazy, but families really knew that they wanted to have children have those interactions. But there's nothing like real people getting a chance to get to know a neighbor or spend time in relationships. Those early experiences in relationships are so critical. They affect everything, biological systems, our learning, our health. It really affects brain architecture. So parents, get out there and play with your children, talk to your children, read to your children. It doesn't always have to be, include them in regular routines. It doesn't have to be screen time.
Talking with early childhood development leader Barb Tangestall, fielding questions about pandemic babies, about charting developmental milestones, researchers have documented delays. You can join in on the impact on speech, on language development, social skills, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about babies born during the pandemic displaying developmental delays, what early childhood researchers are noticing in their data tracking. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. According to research published in the journal Nature, on average, the infants through toddlers assessed in 2020 and 2021, they scored lower on tests of early learning, including language, puzzle solving, and motor skills like standing and walking. You can join in on questions and observations of developmental milestones, 800-642-1234. Barb Tangestall leads a nonprofit supporting early childhood development in three Wisconsin counties with us for about nine more minutes. Barb, what impact do you think the stress of the pandemic on families perhaps might be connecting a little bit to these developmental delays of a parent being very distracted by all the stress of their jobs, of the financial pressures of the pandemic?
That's a great question, Kate. What we have learned out of the Center for the Developing Child and out of Harvard is that toxic stress can really overload everything and affect the architecture of the brain, your biological systems. And toxic stress can be just what parents and people around you even feel, or it ends up having you activate in children when they aren't sure what is going to be, if they're going to be yelled at, or if they're not going to get a regular meal, or they're not getting their nap times. All of those things can be toxic stress, money worries with families, moving and homelessness. All of those pieces create toxic stress that affect the stress responses in a baby.
Looking closer at developmental screenings, the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health said the state has failed to improve its early developmental screening rate, staying within the margin of error of previous years. What do you think should be done at a statewide level to increase screening rates in young children?
Well, we're expanding Help Me Grow. Help Me Grow is a community-based program that offers free screening. We'll be opening up Help Me Grow in Kenosha and up in Brown County and Kewaunee and in some rural parts around the Outagamie-Calumet area. But also, universal screening is done in early intervention programs, in home visiting. It's free. Parents can do that. It's happening within their ask for it to happen within your well child visit, if it's not already happening. And get connected and monitor that development. Our state is looking at trying to expand it more. The Department of Health, I'll be speaking with the Prevention Board tomorrow. What can we do to really get screening and monitoring readily available in all areas of our state? It can happen. It's not that expensive either.
Barb, can you take us through what a screening is like? What happens in a developmental screening?
Yeah, so I'll walk you through the ASQ, the ASQ-3. Let's take 9 months. So a parent can, it's very family focused. So a parent or a teacher will look and observe what children are doing. So there will be questions like in communication for a 9-month-old, does your baby make a sound like da, ga, ka? It might be looking at a gross motor skill. We'll ask you a question. If you hold both hands just to balance your baby, does she support on her own weight while standing? Yes, sometimes, not yet. And you go through and answer questions like this for problem solving, for fine motor, gross motor. An example for problem solving when holding a toy in your child's hand, does your baby bang it against another toy on the table? All of those things are ways in which we check to see if children are doing age-appropriate experiences. And then once those screenings take place and parents answer those questions, just yes, sometimes or not yet, then you get a score. And that score then tells you where you need support, where that child needs support in different developmental domains.
What might a screening look like for a little bit of an older child, a 3-4-year-old, for instance?
Yeah, so a 4-year-old would say their screening will be looking at how many words they might use. Do they role play? Do they take on different activities? How are they, what's their fine motor skill? Are they able to pick up small pieces or string beads together? Are they able to throw and catch a ball? Those are the types of things that we would be looking for an older child. Or like a 5-year-old, are they able to follow rules, take turns while playing, tell a story, or even share a conversation back and forth with more than 3 and 4 exchanges? Those are types of things that we look at through an ASQ screening.
Barb Tangestall is with us, head of First 5 Fox Valley. This is a child development organization working across 3 counties in the Fox Valley region. You can join in, questions, your thoughts on early childhood development, 800-642-1234, and what your family has experienced in the pandemic. Let's go to Steve now in Sun Prairie. Hi, Steve. What would you like to bring up?
Yeah, you know, I heard the guest talking about 4K. You know, just a very brief history in Wisconsin. The 4K program was really developed so that schools can get more money as part of the revenue sharing program, that schools get money based on what the populations are. So by artificially creating a 4K program, that created more revenue for that particular district. All districts got online with that, so every school pretty much has a 4K. Or what we did was elevate the cost of education. The science tells us whether kids are in 4K or not in 4K, by the time they get to third grade, they're at the same stage. So what we did was waste dollars that have no actual educational outcomes that are superior as a result of those dollars being spent.
Steve, thank you. So not supportive of 4K. Barb, go ahead.
I would beg to differ with the research that he just tried to talk about. But 4K is very much, if you give children the opportunities to have play-based learning, to have guided work with knowledge and educated teachers, you'll find that there is an increase. In fact, it sometimes can level the playing field by providing more equitable access to school and preschool experiences, especially in rural areas where they might not have access to the play groups like you might have in larger cities.
Let's look for advice for parents, solutions. What should a parent do if their child is not meeting age-appropriate developmental milestones?
Thank you. That's a great question. They should talk to their pediatrician or take a screening online through Help Me Grow. And then they can get a score, and then we'll send them some information about what the next steps are. But it always starts with doing a screening, observing your child, and just keeping track of how they are doing. The CDC recommends screenings at 9, 15 months, and 24 months, and an autism screening at 15 and 24 months. So those are kind of key pieces to catch delays early so that there can be some interventions that help children not fall behind.
How important is it to catch a delay early in your viewpoint?
You know, sometimes it can be just a simple tweak of what a family can do at home. An example is we had a family resource navigator that worked with a family that a child at 22 months was not really doing a lot of, wasn't meeting the milestones for language. She talked with that family and said, you know, use words with children. Instead of just giving them their breakfast or their snack, say, I'm going to give you a peach. How about that? And then have them say it back to you. And just with a few tweaks, that family in 3 months took another screening because they were more intentional with their language that they used with their child. That child moved from concern up to regular developmental milestones. And all children don't grow at the same time. We have to realize that sometimes they are behind at one period, but just a little bit of tweaking and support can bring them up easily.
Barb, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for thinking about how important it is to look at child development and supporting individual growth early on in life. And thank you to our community partners who have really supported the Help Me Grow project, too.
Barb Tangestahl is Executive Director of First Five Fox Valley. It's a nonprofit providing developmental screenings in three counties. Ahead this hour, we touch down on arts in Wisconsin with the head of the state's arts board. In your community, are arts organizations thriving or struggling to hang on? 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This month, thousands of college students in Wisconsin will cross the commencement stage, toss their caps, and trade campus life for new careers. As Rich Kramer reports, their prospects may be the best they've been in a decade.
The final months before college graduation can be a time of anxious job searches and streams of outgoing resumes. That's not the case for University of Wisconsin River Falls senior Nisi Obasi. The computer science and economics double major accepted an offer in August to become an investment analyst with Deutsche Bank in New York.
Now I've had the chance to really enjoy senior year without having that on my back.
Her advice to other students who may still be looking? Don't be afraid to counter an offer because you may have the upper hand.
I feel like negotiation skills, not a lot of people have them. So if you're given an offer for 100K, you just take it. You can get that to 120 and maybe throw on something on top if you just negotiate.
A spring survey by the National Association of Colleges and Employers shows businesses planning to boost college grad recruitment by more than 30% this year. That's the sharpest year-to-year increase in at least a decade.
This is an even hotter period for recruiters than they thought it was going to be in the fall.
Josh Kahn is assistant director of research for the group. He says recruiters are keenly aware of increasing competition for college grads. Their average starting salary is projected to top $50,000.
They know that they need to make good offers. They know that they need to raise wages and benefits to make attractive offers, competitive offers.
Taylor Schmidt-Franz is a senior at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire who landed a teaching job in April, just one day after her first interview.
February, March was kind of freaking out a little bit because I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Like, where am I going to live and all that stuff? But it feels really good. I feel ready to graduate now.
Even for seniors like UW-Eau Claire's Hannah Leah, graduating without a job offer isn't that scary.
It's a really big job market right now, so I'm not really too concerned, especially because there's like a teacher shortage and they're paying people to go back to school to become teachers because they need them so bad.
Sam Mattson considers himself one of the lucky ones. The UW-Eau Claire senior says he was asked to stay on after finishing up a student teaching job at a middle school in the city.
I think the biggest problem I have with it is you get into the classroom some more and you have current teachers that have been there for a long time saying, are you sure? Are you 100% positive? So you're second-guessing yourself more than you are the economy at this rate.
The national unemployment rate for those with at least a four-year degree was 2% in March. The unemployment rate for those with high school diplomas was twice that. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York reported a record pay gap last year of $22,000 between those with bachelor degrees and those without.
With a college degree, your ability to be employed is greatly enhanced.
That's Jim Kwopik, District Director for International Talent Recruiting Company, Robert Half.
Many employers are getting out ahead of the graduating class, and they're locking students in well before they graduate, unlike it's ever been.
But college enrollment has fallen since 2020. Elise Gould with the Economic Policy Institute says the pandemic added new roadblocks for many minority and lower-income potential students who may not have been able to come up with tuition.
That's just not accessible to many people across the country.
As the race to recruit college students heats up, those watching the trends expect things to cool, though they're not sure how or when. In the meantime, those nearing graduation appear to be calling the shots in today's hiring economy, and they know it. Rich Kramer, Wisconsin Public Radio.
And now to the arts. A recent report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum found that arts and culture organizations are showing signs of recovery from the pandemic, that jobs in the arts recovered significantly last year. Join in about the arts in Wisconsin with your thoughts and questions, 800-642-1234. Perhaps you're a creator or you work for a museum, a music venue, theater troupe. George Sugros is executive director of the Wisconsin Arts Board. That's the state agency responsible for supporting and developing the arts in communities across the state. George, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, take us a little bit closer here. Explain the role of the Arts Board and what you do for this sector of the economy.
Sure. So the Wisconsin Arts Board is a 15-member board appointed by the governor. And those folks come from all walks of life, all areas of the state, all aspects of the arts. They may be artists, they may be patrons, they may be professors, who knows? They could be any of those things. And we have a great group of Arts Board members right now. Their responsibility is for the policy and planning for the arts in the state. And we have a staff of four that supports their work. And so people know us as a grant maker, but we also provide artists and arts organizations and communities technical assistance, link people to information and other organizations and artists. And so we've got a lot of work on our plate, but we really appreciate having it because, as you said, the creative economy, the creative industries are really important to our state as well.
I would imagine it isn't a one-size-fits-all approach to how a city or a town or a village treats the arts or elevates an arts organizations in their community. What is that scale like for you? How do you meet communities where they're at with what they want to do in the arts?
So that's the beauty of the Wisconsin idea, right? It's what does that community want to do? And then we meet them there. So some people might have already been down the path, and what they want to do is have some support in figuring out how to get to the next level with their board. Some communities will say, I want to create a mural. And I've never done that in my community before. And do you know anybody who has? And so we can connect them to whether it's the Black Cat in Milwaukee or the great historical murals in Ashland. We can connect people and they can have conversations and get further down the road than should they have just been flailing around trying to do it themselves.
I understand you also just fielded a call on a community wanting to start a local poet laureate program.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the good news about that is, again, there are many communities in the state of Wisconsin that have municipal poet laureate as well as our great state poet laureate. Mm. And so, again, connecting that person who wants a poet laureate in their community to those who've created ordinances or created processes to select one takes that community further down the road.
Explain, George, if you will, how the arts are an economic driver for the state. What do the numbers look like? What do the arts generate?
So that's a great question. And the Bureau of Economic Analysis out of the U.S. Department of Commerce has what they call an arts and culture production satellite account for the arts in Wisconsin. And previously that number was $10.7 billion with a B. So when we think about the arts, we tend to think Oliver Twist coming along and saying, please, sir, may we have some more. Mm. But the reality is quite different. And those numbers have dropped, as you might suspect, given COVID. So the number now is $9.6 billion, but still it's billion with a B. And the contributions are many, whether it's the attraction of and retention of the great workforce that we're going to need. People want to be in communities where creativity thrives, or getting it. Thank God we can still get out and go now to restaurants prior to the productions that we're going to see or the exhibitions we're going to see. So it's the spending of money in restaurants and parking and babysitters and all of those parts of the economy as well. And then there's the for-profit side of the industry as well. So dance supply stores, music supply stores, those kinds of things. So when we think of the creative industries, it's a big family picture.
let's take a look here at federal pandemic aid, ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act, and funds that were put toward the arts and culture and tourism. Wisconsin allocating roughly 6% of ARPA funding. Other states on average received less than 2%. Why do you think Wisconsin allocated a higher rate than other states?
Well, I think it first starts with the governor's support of the arts and culture. So directing the Department of Administration to use some of those funds in that way. We also have a very successful arts community that took advantage of all of the opportunities presented to them, whether that was the payroll protection plans or the
shuttered venues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all of those programs, Wisconsin organizations went after those. And that's why the policy forum talks about how important that was, that Wisconsin didn't lose many arts organizations along the way. You might have suspected, given being closed, and the arts closed first and are coming back into business last, you might have suspected we would have lost many organizations. But because of the influx of dollars directly from ARPA, from the National Endowment for the Arts, from the state, and of course, through the Wisconsin Arts Board, organizations were able to hang on. The challenge is now going forward in fiscal 23, where there won't be federal money. There are challenges in the workforce. There's inflation and the return of audiences after being out for so long is, for some organizations come back fast, some a little more slowly. And then the fear of new variants, all of those things will affect how quickly the arts organizations' budgets rebound, as well as the businesses of the artists, for sure.
I wonder, should patrons expect a price increase for an art-focused event like a concert as they see, rising inflation all around them? What do you make of that?
Well, I think arts organizations are really good at putting a sharpened pencil to their budgets and figuring out what they really need to do. And so it'll be a combination of, will there be increases? Will there be seeking of additional contributed income? And on the other side of it, Kate, Wisconsin is really very good about the free events as well. And, free events are never free. Somebody's paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
But having said that, the community can come out to a concert during the summertime, and I'm sure they're looking forward to that this summer after not having them for a while, and enjoying the arts free to them.
We're talking about the arts in Wisconsin with George Sugros, who leads the Wisconsin Arts Board. He is a member of the Cultural Coalition of Wisconsin and the Wisconsin Council on Tourism. Join in on where you see the arts alive, where you see it's been diminished in these times. 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute with George Sugros here on the Ideas Network. We're discussing arts in Wisconsin on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our state is almost rock bottom, save for Arizona, 49th for funding for arts and culture in 2022. That's from the State Arts Agency Revenues Report published by the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies. Wisconsin allocates 14 cents per state resident. Connecticut on top with nearly $10 per person. You can join in on arts funding, the future of creatives in your community, what projects you're working on, 800-642-1234. George Sugros is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Arts Board. He's been at the state agency for more than 30 years, with us for about 9 more minutes. George, when you look at those numbers, Wisconsin being almost dead last with funding for the arts through state allocations, what is going on there?
Well, the challenge is that the current environment is to not spend money in this space. But it's a mistake because as we look across our border to Minnesota, we're looking at $7.34 per capita versus 14 cents in the state of Wisconsin. Now, we don't think of ourselves as spending 14 cents. We don't think of ourselves in that way because we have amazing arts organizations and artists in our state. But the reality is those organizations, those artists need support. And the investment from the state isn't a black hole. It actually generates tax revenue and other things for the state of Wisconsin. So, but moreover, that is a symbol to the creatives out there that maybe they want to go somewhere else. And unfortunately, we've had that conversation with students who say, you know, I like Wisconsin, I'd love to stay here, but I don't see the support for the arts that I see in Minnesota and other places. So I'm going to leave. I may come back, but right now I'm going to go where support is greater. So that's of concern to us. So it goes far beyond the arts as far as the lack of support.
I wonder if we had more per capita spending for the arts, say we were middle of the pack for states and financial support of the arts, what would that allow the arts board to do? What could you do differently?
Well, first we can do more support of projects that people want to do in their communities. Right now, we've got a little less than $200,000 to spend on projects in communities. If we had more, not only could we spend more in those communities, but our grants are one-to-one match. So it leverages dollars in the community for those projects as well. So that's the first thing. We could do more of what's great. And then we can do things that we can't do now. For example, we're in the age of the creative economy. We had to give up our individual artist fellowships. What a crazy time to not be able to highlight the most creative among us. So that's another piece.
What is the individual artist fellowship? Explain what it is.
Sure. An individual artist fellowship is a recognition of the best and brightest in the artists of our state. So meaning their career work. So looking at a career of a visual artist or a composer, et cetera, and lifting up the best of those in the application process. And it's a wonderful way to showcase Wisconsin's creativity. And Wisconsin's creativity is not one size fits all. You know, it could be the most avant-garde artist, but it could be the most classical trained artist as well. It's just taking those great expressions and lifting them up into view. And so a fellowship gives them some money to go and continue to do their work and deepen their work because they're not worrying about paying for studio space or paying for supplies and that kind of thing.
I would imagine your board would try in the future to get these fellowships back.
It's certainly something we would do. And concurrently, we would recognize more in the traditional and ethnic arts. You know, we've been lucky enough to have award winners at the National Heritage Award fellowships that the National Endowment does. But it would be wonderful to be able to recognize those traditional artists from all aspects, all cultures of our state as well.
These grants you provide, one-to-one match, is that a barrier for communities that can't put up that match money?
Well, in the projects, it's not as big a barrier because in-kind is allowed as part of the match.
Okay.
So that helps to do that. And in-kind is a wonderful representation of the support of the community to an organization. So that one-to-one match is true. A fellowship, by the way, is not a one-to-one match. That's a straight grant to that artist.
We're talking about the arts in Wisconsin with the Arts Board Executive Director George Sugros, a state agency focusing on creativity, expression, promoting the arts. You can join in with your questions, how you see the arts doing in your community. Give us a thermometer reading, if you will, 800-642-1234. George, in 2023, the Arts Board will celebrate the 50th anniversary of the board. What do you have in store there for next year?
Well, we're in the planning stages of that. But what we're doing is we're reaching back out to former Arts Board members, putting together that list so we can bring them together as part of this. Try to understand and doing the research to understand our investment in the arts over that 50 years. because it's, while our year-to-year investment is, as you said, at the bottom of the list, that 50-year investment will be an impressive number to arts organizations and artists across the state.
You also have a strategic plan that's underway. Every 3 years, a new one, and the next one will be finalized later this summer. One of the goals, as you look at the draft, is to insist upon competitive resources and smart public policy. What do you see as smart public policy in the arts? What does that look like?
Well, it looks like what each community would like to have it look like, but what that means is that the artists and the arts organizations and community organizations are involved in the discussions around how transportation looks in a community, how healthcare looks in a community, how business works in a community. So the arts not on the sidelines of those conversations, not put on the side and saying that's quality of life and that's all it's about, but having the creative people involved in making decisions, because Einstein once said, didn't he, that doing the same thing expecting a different result is insanity. And what we have now is many, many challenges that need creative thinking. And so having artists and arts organizations involved in the broader community conversations makes healthier, resilient communities.
In our last moments together, what have you learned after more than 30 years with the Arts Board? What has stood out?
What an amazing set of artists and communities we have. And it's, you had used the phrase before, the not one size fits all. So if you're looking for the historical murals of Ashland, you're going to see one thing. If you go to Door County, you're going to experience art on every level in that natural environment. If you go to Reedsburg and you go to the Farm Art Detour, you're going to have yet a different experience. And if you go into the neighborhoods of Milwaukee and Madison, yet another. So I still love the opportunity to go out and visit people doing what they do. And then the best part about it from the Arts Board perspective is helping them to do it better or do something different, whatever it is they're hoping to do for themselves and their communities.
George, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Kate. Thanks for having me.
George Sugros is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Arts Board, the state agency focused on creativity, expression, promoting arts throughout the state of Wisconsin. Find a link to the Arts Board at wpr.org/mornings. Just ahead is the popularity of state parks in Wisconsin with a DNR section chief who's visited everyone, has tons of tips on the hidden gems. Join in on state parks, the ones you love, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.
Shigley host.